And welcome everybody to the Bangers and Classics podcast. That's with me, James Ruppert, and him, David Malloy. And as always, what's David been up to?
Well, I spent most of yesterday in hiding, James. I
had to. Oh, no.
Well, we put a young horse and he was getting gelded yesterday, so the vet was round.
Oh, right.
And I was just concerned, you know, that the vet might have offered my wife a bog off in on the gelding.
Well, that's very true.
You know, so I had to make myself scarce for a while.
Mm.
But I survived the experience, you'll be glad to know.
Yeah.
In terms of seeing classic cars, pretty fallow. Saw an MG F or TF when I was out this morning. Couldn't tell it was an F or a TF. It doesn't really matter. It was being driven badly, whatever it was. And the other car I've seen, you don't see many of these around nowadays, was an Audi A2, which seems to reside in a local village. That's been me. What about you?
Oh, I've had a spectacular spotting week, David. First of all, I always think of you. Obviously, I think of you most of the time. But whenever I see an Alan, and this was an Alan Plus 2, I don't know whether you can fit in it or not.
No.
But you can't fit one of those. But
I wouldn't try. I wouldn't even try.
Yeah, no, sort of white one, and it did look fairly spectacular. They're still not outrageously expensive. I did look into one a few years ago, and you could get a really quite perfect one for about 20 grand, and if not a bit less. And I thought that was extremely good. So that was nice. Again, I thought of you again, David, when I saw a Citroen Dayan, because I know that's one of your favourites. It was nice. And that was also cream or a white colour. So it was very good to see that out on the roads. And finally, a very spectacular spot indeed, because there was obviously a massive backstory to what I was witnessing. Because what I saw was a Mercedes saloon. It was a W114 from the early 70s, and it was left-hand drive. It was also a 200 diesel, a model that never came here, and it wasn't pristine condition at all. It was very, very bangerish. It had different body panels. Certainly one of the front wings was different. It was driven by a very old gentleman, indeed, and I really wanted to know an awful lot more about it. It was a British registered car, but it was a left hooker, and I'd like to know how he came to be driving that around. There was a very, very slight suggestion with this scruffy car that he may have been sleeping in it, I think.
Cool.
He reminds me of where I'm going, because I think I'm going to be like that in a few years' time. I will be on the road and in one of my old cars, and I don't know, going from supermarket car park to supermarket car park whenever I can. But if time had been on my side, I think I would have stopped and had a good conversation with him, because there was really a lot going on there. It was I'd like to know how he got hold of the car, and what his whole story was. I mean, he could have been a Cold War spy or something. But it was quite fascinating. But it was nice to see again. I mean, it really was a 1970s banger, and I wouldn't have known exactly what year it was. They made them up to 1976. But as I say, a 200 diesel, you would not have got anywhere. But basically, that will run on chip fat or just about anything that you've got lying around. So I really did enjoy seeing that. Mm. And whilst we're here, David, we have lots of people signing up to listen to us, which is always greatly appreciated. And Mr. David Bush from Australia very, very kindly put a long comment on one of our on our latest podcast, which was uploaded. So it's just to say hello to him and thank him for listening in. I'm sure he knows what he's doing, but he may come to regret this, but there you go.
Indeed, absolutely. Well done, Mr. Bush.
Thank you.
Just thinking back to the Elan, James, of course, yes. It's not a proper Elan, is it?
It's not a proper Elan.
It's not the M100. So the Elan they made in the 60s, I mean, it was held together with sellotape and bits of squeezy bottle, wasn't it?
No, it's a plus two, David. It's a lot longer. It's a lot bigger.
Yeah, well, yeah, sort of. But you still couldn't swing a cat in it. You should be swinging a cat anywhere.
No,
I hasten to add. No, it's still very small on the inside.
Yeah.
I think it looks better than the original 60s Elan. But I'm just not a fan of the Elan. It never really appealed to me. I always felt it looked too fragile. Though, I mean, in terms of performance and handling, it was excellent. But get a 90s one. Trust me on this. Get a good 90s one. You won't go wrong. And if it does go wrong, well, you know, blame it on somebody else. Speaking of British cars, shall we move on to this week's Bangor Classic?
Well, we can do, absolutely.
If you were the wheel of this car, you would not be mistaken for a Cold War spy, I have to say. Okay. But my uncle, the chap who knew Robin Friday, etc., etc., had several of these when I was a kid. Therefore, it's got a sort of little special place in my heart, I suppose. I'm kind of biased. But the car we're going to discuss in this week's Bangor Classic is the Hillman Hunter, which is, of course, part of the Roots Arrow family. And there are all sorts of variants of it. What are your thoughts on it, James?
It's a banger, David.
Surely not. I mean,
oh, yeah. No, well, I know because we had one. My dad bought one in 1969 or 70. I can't remember. It was a H-plate one. And it was awful. Within 6 years, it was fairly rotten. Inside, it was so plasticky, you just couldn't believe it. It really was. I mean, on a hot day, it was the worst place on earth to be. And it was just a very dismal car. Obviously, when I knew he was going to buy one, I thought he was actually going to get a GT because I love the look of the GT with the high back seats and road style wheels and all that. I thought, oh, he'll get one of those. Well, obviously he didn't. He got a Minx, which had the 1496 engine, which wasn't going to go anywhere. But I just basically thought it was awful. So there you go. That's my take on that.
Oh, see, my uncle had, I think he did a GT, did a couple of GLSs.
Oh, right.
But to go back to the Hunter family, the Arrow family, as it were, it did win the 1968 London and Sydney Rally, James.
It did, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, in the hands of the late Andrew Cowan.
Yes,
Then went on to become Mitsubishi Motorsports Supremo in Europe, presiding over it in the days when Tommy Mäkinen was winning lots and lots of rallies and world championships.
No, that's right. I do have the Corgi model with the little kangaroo that you used to have. And it has the wheels you can take off. I forget what that was called, but you can take the wheels off and everything. But that's got pride of place. I can actually turn around in my office and see it on the shelf. But our one would not have won the London to Sydney marathon.
Your dad bought the wrong one, I'm afraid.
He did, didn't he?
So he did buy the wrong one. But, I mean, there were so many to choose from.
There was.
At one stage, you had the Hillman Hunter in this country. You had the Hillman Minx, the Humber Scepter, the Singer Vogue and Gazelle, the Sunbeam Alpine and Rapier, which were the fastback versions. You could buy a Hillman Arrow in some other countries. And I believe, amongst other names, there was also the Hillman GT and various other things. Yeah. You could even buy, I believe, in South Africa as a Dodge Husky pickup. And if you lived in Iran, you could buy one into the 21st century as a Paycan. I believe a pickup version of it continued until about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But the one to have, James, was the GLS.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Apart from the only downside of it was the vinyl roof. It was just a rust trap. You could water trap between the vinyl and the metal, and your roof rusted. That's basically what happened. And most vinyl roofs, I believe, they weren't good things. I don't think they were aesthetically pleasing either. But the GLS had twin round headlights, which was nice. It had the 1725cc engine, but not the bog standard 1725. This one was tuned by Holby. It had a couple of twin choke Webers and, I believe, a hotter camshaft. It wasn't a flying machine, but it was quick for its day. And, of course, James also had road-style wheels. They were strong cars. My uncle was in a very serious car crash, probably about 1972. I think I've spoken about this before, about a ghost story, involving his girlfriend at the time, who then became his wife. But basically, there was an accident on the far side of a humpback bridge in a country road. And the road was blocked just literally over the crown of the bridge. But you couldn't see there'd been an accident. The accident involved two cars. Both drivers seemed to have gone off in opposite directions in search of help. No mobile phones in those days. Didn't leave anything around to warn anyone. My uncle comes over the bridge, ploughs straight into the two crashed cars, and his car then does multiple somersaults, ends up in the field. And my aunt did lose all the fingers in the right hand except her thumb, but my uncle survived it with barely a scratch. I would wager in many cars, neither of them would have been coming out of that alive. So for that reason alone, it's got my affection. It was what it was, James. It was a conventional rear-wheel drive saloon, of course, in the state version, only the Sunbeam fastbacks. It wasn't avant-garde in terms of styling or in terms of technology. It was a fairly robust, simple car that did a good job. And they're underappreciated nowadays, I think. They had a long production life, didn't cease production in Europe anyway until 1979. And they became Chrysler's, I think, in 76. And they lived long enough to even see Chrysler Europe become Talbot. after after being bought out.
Yeah.
However, they were never badged at Talbot. But today, if you're looking just purely for Hunter, not for any of the other variants, there were just 136 Hillman Hunters left on the road in the UK, according to the DVLA, 105 more on Sorn, and one Chrysler Hunter with 7 on Sorn. That's it. Of course, there are Humber Scepters, there are Sunbeam Rapiers, etc. So there are more than that.
Yeah.
But it is quite an endangered species.
Mm.
I spent some time in my uncle's car when I was a kid. I was only probably single figures in those days, mid-70s, whatever. And I enjoyed it. Made a nice noise, comfortable. So, yeah, for me, classic.
It's still a banger, David.
He's gone and done it again, folks. He has totally dissed me yet again. Oh, this is getting out of control. This is.
Sorry about that.
For the umpteenth week in a row. This section has been tacked on to the main recording of the podcast. It's here because I've just read the message from Mr. Bush on the Bangers and Classics YouTube page. And it's a very nice message indeed, for which I thank Mr. Bush. But I also noted that he agreed with me regarding the looks of the Fiat Stilo Schumacher edition, something that Mr. Ruppert singularly failed to mention when we were recording the podcast. And I wonder why that is. Not. Anyway, it's nice to have someone agree with me. It gets one over James just for a change. So I'm going to chuck this section in and say, Yabu sucks to you, James. 1-0. No doubt you'll get your own back, James. But in the meantime, on this somewhat happy note, let's take a break. You're listening to the Bangers and Classics podcast with James Ruppert, the Preacher Man, and David Malloy, the 29th Sea Lord. We're back after the break. Are you there, James?
Oh, and yeah, I'm sorry, David. I was there. I was just just doing some housekeeping there.
We have a challenge this week.
All right.
In the same vein as the 1970s footballer challenge.
Mm.
So it's not really, we're not looking for actual cars for sale right now. He's gone off and won again. The challenge is to find the up and be off one of those aspirational 1980s types. Other nomenclature is available. Can't have more than four cylinders because our yuppie's budget, he's quite a young yuppie. He can't stretch to a six and above. And it has to be the sort of car that will mark him out to senior management having the right stuff. Oh, and we have to approach the challenge as if we're back in the 1980s. So we're talking about 1980s cars as though we were in the 1980s. So just get your red braces on. Let's see what you came up with.
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't know whether I've misunderstood this or not. Some of these briefs, David, are very confusing, I must say, for a gentleman of my advanced years.
Well, damn, unconfuse yourself.
What I'm doing, but I think I've ticked all the relevant boxes and so forth. Obviously, dear listener, I am old enough to actually have been there. I was there. And this is very much my territory. So I would know exactly what I would do at the time.
But where you were yuppie, James?
I don't know. I worked amongst them, I suppose. In some ways, I was very aspirational. Did end up buying a house in the 1980s. I don't know. Yes, I and the cars what I drove and the clothes what I wore. I may mark me out slightly. That I think everybody was really who certainly worked in an office and had their hair done, be they girl or boys, were very much yuppies at the time.
Yeah, I just made the 80s as in terms of working in an office.
Yeah,
it was the last 6 months of it when I started my legal training.
Yeah.
June 1989. I wasn't a yuppie. I was a scruffy git all the time anyway. Really? I'd never have made it as a yuppie. I wouldn't have bought the same cars as them anyway, knowing me. I did wear a trench coat when I was younger. Probably because it rained a lot. That was probably why. Yeah. Anyway, what I'll do is I'll start this off, James, so you can adjust your...
Well, no, there's no adjustments needed. My car was parked right in front of me.
I think I can guess what it's going to be. To me, the various cars that just simply wouldn't make the grade.
Mm.
Fords, Vauxhalls, Rovers, anything else that's got the whiff of Repmobile to it.
Mm.
Just won't do. French car won't do. And I don't think even a 205 GTI would do for a yuppie. I just don't see that. They're lacking in what might be called perceived gravitas. Even though they're great cars. And a lot of French cars of that era were great, but wouldn't have done. And most Italian cars, I think, probably miss out for the same reason. I mean, you could say an Alfa Romeo 75 would have been a brilliant car to have, But the problem for our yuppie is that he knows that residuals aren't great and he can't afford to be seen as someone who's made an unsound investment. So he can't go there. German cars, well, Porsche 944 would be ideal, but it's just a bit too expensive. He certainly covets one, as our lad, and a cough splitter, etc., a 911 even more so. But he might be tempted, perhaps, by a Saab. Saab 900 might be a good left-field option, show some independence of thought, while still maintaining rock-solid judgment in terms of residuals, etc. But there's a problem here. His image might just be a little bit too staid, turbo waddles notwithstanding, and anyway, does our yuppie want people to mistake him for an architect? Probably not. So, I think he's going to go for something like a BMW 318. They're very common in red. So perhaps he might, being a wise yuppie, which I think is a bit of an oxymoron, go for a slightly less common one in black. Standard specification is to save for a nice set of alloys and perhaps a decent radio cassette if he's had a good bonus that month. He could also go for an Audi 80, particularly from the mid-80s. That'd be, I think, the choice of a more technically conscious yuppie. Slightly more advanced specification, fresher looks, same impression of quality. And the other option, the final option I've got for you, James, is Germanic as well. It's a Golf GTI. It's popular, it's an impression of quality, good residuals, and he probably thinks it's better for impressing young women. Personally, never a fan of the Golf GTI, but I was never a yuppie. So, what have you got? Being a man who was on the scene, had his finger on the pulse, what have you got?
I have got a 1986 Volkswagen GTI Mark II, which is on sale. And I was looking for ones on sale, and there's quite a lot in the early 90s. And this one is from the actual 80s. And also, the mileage is apparently genuine. It's 70,000 miles, never sprayed. It's actually on steel wheels, which would have saved you a few pence. The ones that I had, I always had.
Yeah, yuppie points lost there.
Well, yeah.
Steel wheels.
Well, yeah, I had Pirelli P alloys on the ones that I had. But this is very affordable because it's only 6,200. So that's why I thought it was quite good. But it's in red, which isn't my favourite colour. But it was I wanted to find a 1980s one to fit in with your brief. But as I now know, I'm way off your brief. But it's an early-ish car because it does have the quarter lights in, so that the door mirrors are sort of too far back to be of any use whatsoever. But that's quite an interesting thing. But this looks an extremely solid car, and it seems extremely good value for what it is. But that's what I would have bought and was what I did buy at the time when I wasn't given a brand new BMW every month. The first thing I did after a short time was to go and buy Volkswagen Golf GTIs. They were cheaper, much better value, a lot faster, and a real hoot. And you could load them up with tons of stuff as well. You could pull loads into them. And it combined everything. It was the very best of the yuppie motors, I would say, of the era.
I had a hot hatchback in the late 80s, James. I got left just enough money to buy one. Wasn't a new one or anything like it. But can you guess what hot hatch I would have gone for? It's not a Golf GTI. You can guess that straight away.
Yeah. Was it your famous Renault 19?
No, it wasn't out yet, remember? That was a few years later.
All right.
My much loved Renault 1916 valve. Yep, brilliant car. But no, right mark though, it was the Renault 11 Turbo.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the phase one. I had later had a phase two. I actually had both together at one point. Don't know how I managed that. Probably why I ended up skint for most of the rest of the following few years, but not to worry. But yeah, Renault 11 Turbo, greatest hot hatch ever made. Well, of the 80s anyway, I think. I actually wrote about that a while ago, why it was, just from personal experience, and I stand by it. It looked after me. I looked after everybody else around me as well, which was great too. Wonderful car. Anyway, there we go. So our yuppie choice is going to be the Golf GTI, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Golf GTI or the Golf GTI, isn't it really?
The Golf GTI, the Golf GTI. Mm. And I'll see them in my rear view mirror, just as I did back in the day. Anyway, so let's move on. The last segment of the podcast. It's the Danger Mobile.
All right.
And we're going to something much more my taste than the Golf GTI. I think you'll like it too, James.
Yeah.
We're going to look at the Alfa Sud Sprint / Alfa Romeo Sprint.
Mm.
Beautiful car. I think we've got to agree on that, have we?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Stunning looking car. Mm. Came out in the mid-70s, based obviously on the Alfa Sud.
Yeah.
But I've had one back in the day. I very nearly did buy one. It was the car I considered. I was a little bit afraid of reliability and rust. That's why I didn't get one, to my regret. The sad thing is, James, they only had a long production life.
Yeah.
There's only 105 left in UK roads.
Goodness me.
That's all that are left. Built something like 160,500 of these. That's all in those 13 years. And it was sold in Europe. It was sold down under as well. Mm. And a car that looked like I had to sell so few units. It was badly harmed, I think, by Alfa Romeo's reputation for rust back in the day. Yeah. You know, when you look at it against even most hot hatches, with a 1.7 engine, it was competitive in terms of performance, but it had the advantage of just looking so much better than most of them, than in fact, almost all of them, I'd say. And it's a damn shame that perhaps it didn't do better, and it's an even bigger shame that so few are left. But what did you think of them?
They were very interesting cars. I actually, very, very, very pretty. I did have one as a part exchange when I was working, and I sort of owned it for half an hour, and then it got passed on. So that was probably the best way to actually run one at the time, because they sort of did rust and they did break down and all that sort of stuff. But they're very pretty to look at, and I do like them an awful lot. And far be it from me to plug books and what I've written. But you see, if anybody has the latest curb crawler, they can actually see one which I saw it would have been in the early 90s, actually, at Wembley car auctions. And nobody wanted it. There you go. It had a reserve price of £500. And nobody wanted to buy it at all. I think it got to 360 or something. Not to spoil it for anybody. And that was it. That just shows you that nobody cared. And it was very, very sad. That was a 84 on an A, 70,000 miles. And the bidding started at 300 and petered out at 360. So there you go. Another reason to get a time machine of some description.
Absolutely.
But as you say, an incredibly beautiful car designed by one of our favourites. And there really isn't anything wrong with it at all. It's the perfect car. It's the sort of simple, sort of uncluttered coupe that we don't get anymore.
Absolutely. Mm. With a range of great engines. From 1300 up to the 1.7. And they're all horizontally opposed engines. They're effectively boxer engines, really.
Yeah.
I think most of them were carbureted, but I think some of the later ones were fuel injected.
Yeah.
Just a few of the 1.7s had fuel injection. Yeah. And they had a decent turn of speed. I mean, obviously, again, as I said before, speed doesn't count that much because it's only so fast you can drive. Yeah. More about the driving experience. And the Sprint gave that in buckets. It felt great. It was like an even prettier Alfa Sud, a more striking Alfa Sud. You couldn't really go wrong, except in terms of corrosion resistance. That was the big issue.
Yeah.
But if they'd been able to build those a little bit better, with better corrosion resistance, well, the sky should have been the limit, but it didn't happen. But that's no reason not to own one now. Obviously, if you get hold of one, you can get it treated properly against rust. Just look after it, and you've got yourself a very beautiful, and indeed now, a very rare car. So, we shall move on, James, shall we? What else have we got for this week? I think we're just about exhausted it again.
I think we're all going to bed now, aren't we, David? We've had quite an exhausting day and we're all off now, I think.
Your age, of course, you can't help that.
That's right, I've got to have a little snooze this afternoon.
Yeah, us young things have got to go back out and do other things. Yeah. In the big wide world, ducking and diving. That was just mainly because the wife was throwing stuff at me, but we're not going to get into that. Yeah. We shall close the podcast, as we always do, by saying thank you very much for listening. Wherever you are in the world, we do appreciate it. We'll be tuning in next time when we'll have absolutely more of the same sort of nonsense for you. And James will no doubt be dissing my selections even fuller. Cheerio.
Yeah, cheerio, everybody.